Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Well, not sure how everyone is. It's a weekend, kind of much without a lot of major league boxing on, but we did have some things from our ESPN Plus. And those of you that subscribed, I'm sure, were treated to a very good fight this weekend. We do have a couple things to talk about this weekend. Mr. Scully, how are you doing this evening?
Everything's good. How you doing?
Doing great, man. Doing great. I guess the very first thing that we should all talk about as boxing fans is the pardoning of Jack Johnson after all of these years. Were you surprised to hear about that? I mean, after so many other administrations have kind of wobbled on this.
Yeah, it caught me off guard because, you know, I thought it was going to be done several times over the last 10 years. It had come up. And I never could really understand why they didn't just go ahead and do it. When like I had heard about it so many times that it was going to happen and nothing happened. And then now that it did happen, it just, to me, it was a total surprise. I hadn't heard anything about it until it actually happened.
Yeah. Kind of surprised. It was kind of surprising. Like you said, I mean, you know, the Obama administration had talked about it, a couple of administrations before that. Now we finally get it done, and we'll see, you know, if this turns into another political football like the NFL. I certainly hope not.
Right. I hope not, too.
But Scully, we didn't have a lot of action this week. We did have some very interesting articles. The first, Jared Heard calling out Kell Brook or the Charlos. What did you think about that?
Well, the whole Kell Brook thing. I mean, Kell, in his last two fights, has gotten broken orbital bones. So, I mean, I don't know really the point of calling him out at this point. I don't know. You know, it's like calling out a wounded animal. It doesn't really seem like a major step up. So I'd like to see Kell come back, if he does, with a couple fights and see where he looks, how he looks before, and, you know, he steps in there with some elite guys and where beating him would be a big deal. But I do like the fact that at that weight, in and around that weight, there's so many good fighters and so many good fights. But again, one thing I do notice in and around that weight, people very rarely mention Errol Spence's name. I think that deserves some recognition. The fact that you don't see people actually calling him out, they call everybody else out, but when it comes to Errol, they you know, it's almost like they know to not step over the boundary there.
Yeah, it is that is very notable. You know, everybody calls out everybody else, but nobody's calling out Errol. I think just like the rest of us, when they watch tape and they look at them, it's like, well, maybe we can think of something else here. I don't think any fighter is afraid of another fighter, but I do think that they do recognize when one is more skilled than the other.
Right. And you know, and even, you know, the strength. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, and I've thought about this a lot over the years. and I'll give you the perfect example so that everybody can understand. When I was a middleweight and a super middleweight, you know, I mean, I think I proved that I would fight or even spar anybody in the world, you know, and even the better guys, you know, if I had to fight James Toney, if I had to fight these guys. But one guy who I did not look forward to, who I have to admit, I'd say, you know, the money's got to be right for this guy, would be Julian Jackson, you know, because you go in with Julian, that's, you know, you're going to get hit even through the gloves. You're going to have to take more shock, more abuse. There's much more potential for danger permanently fighting a guy like Julian Jackson. It just is the way it is. So, you know, I think fighters have no problem admitting that now, you know, that Julian wasn't somebody you called out. They called out other people, but, you know, like they called out Sugar Ray Leonard much more than they called out Julian, because the money was much better. And that's the fact of the matter. So right now, part of the reason why they're not calling Errol, I think, is because they know that he's a killer, but also because right now, just yet, you know, the money wouldn't equal the risk. So, but again, they're calling everybody else out. And so I just think it's interesting. I think it's funny, you know, and I think Errol should feel kind of complimented by the fact that these guys don't really mention his name too often.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, a matter of respect. And like you said, respect and ability. A couple of things from Eddie Hearns. Eddie Hearns has said that now his major priority is to bring the Deontay Wilder Joshua fight to the UK. Now, when Eddie Hearns put out his other offer, Deontay accepted it, but said that the fight has to be in the U.S. and there would not be a rematch clause. Now, these were the conditions, except for the U.S., of course, that Eddie Hearns put up. The money was there, the location was there. You know, the one sticking point is where the fight was going to be. We've all talked about, you know, the possibility of, you know, more than likely that that Deontay would have to go to the UK if he wanted a unification. What do you think about Eddie Hearns, you know, kind of ultimatum now that the fight has to be in the UK? Does it seem like the Joshua people may be waffling a little bit to you?
Well, I mean, I think there's no question that the fight will be bigger to the British than it will be to Americans. I mean, it'll be big to Americans, but in Britain, everybody will watch the fight. Like, there will be no other shows on that night that will be watched. But the end result, I guess, is which scenario is offering each guy the most money? Is it how much are they offering? You know, how much is Wilder offering and how much is Joshua offering in their respective countries? I haven't read yet. Maybe you know. I have not read yet which one is guaranteeing a bigger paycheck.
Well, right now, the only one that's guaranteeing a paycheck is Deontay. His group has come across with the money that Eddie Hearns had said that you know, he would accept. I think the fee was $25 million. And you know, like I said, the only stipulation the only things that are different seem to be the venue, whether it's here or whether it's there.
Right.
Now that Hearn has talked about the money, it would seem that now he would have to come up with more money than the Deontay group in order to put the fight in the UK.
Right.
But as you said, I mean, and as I've always thought, you know, if you're looking at the money, you know, I'm sure we would rather have pounds over dollars. In particular, the exchange rate, especially when you're talking about, I mean, you know, you're talking about filling up a stadium over in England.
Over here,
you know, I mean, over here, the only place that I could think of, and nobody's really put it, you know, out there yet. I mean, well, there's two places. One would either be Jerry's World or the new Detroit indoor stadium. But, you know, neither one of those have really been proposed. And hey, when you're talking about Wembley or one of those big stadiums, you know, where Joshua fights, you know, if you're fighting for the money, you got to go to the UK.
Right. And I'll tell you another thing, though, that's kind of funny. I've seen fights, but I've actually been to fights in England. I've been to fights in Germany. And a noticeable difference is this, like the way I would picture it. If Wilder went to England, he would be the decided crowd underdog. Like it would be very obvious to everyone in the building that everyone in the building was going for Joshua. That would be very clear. It would almost be like, you know, like Wilder would have to go over there with the idea that everybody's against me and it's going to be very obvious. But in America, it would be different. Like a lot of the crowd would be for Joshua. Some of the people like him. They would want him to win. I don't think Wilder carries that kind of clout in this country like Joshua does over there. And I've seen guys like for example, when Galata fought Bo at Madison Square Garden. Now Riddick's from New York City, and Galata came over here, and I was at that fight, and it was not like a tremendously pro Riddick Bo crowd by any stretch of the imagination. There was so many people there on behalf of Galata, it was incredible. And I would say like the vibe in the arena was about 50-50, half and half, going in each direction. And a lot of the people going for Bo, I think they were just going because he was an American. They didn't even care like what American it was. So I think it's a different vibe over there. And I think Wilder knows if he goes over there, he's going to have no support. Like ultimately just him, his corner man, you know, Mark will be there and Jay will be there and a couple other guys. And that'll be about it. It'll be definitely a pro Joshua crowd as opposed to here, where I think it'll be much more diverse in a split type of crowd. So I think both camps are keeping that in mind as they try to haggle over the site.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now let's talk about my favorite fighter, and Eddie Hearn, Mr. Adrian Broner. Broner, Hearns sent Broner a deal, and let me read a little bit about this deal to you. Now, it's a three-fight deal. It's a one-year deal, $6.7 million. The way the deal, the terms of the deal broke down is that Broner has to fight in September for a purse of $2 million, followed by a second fight in March for $2.25 million, and a third fight in September for $2.5 million. Now, the $2.5 million is higher than any of Broner's previous official purposes, okay? Broner actually came out on Twitter, his social media, and said, let me get this quote, I don't want to get this. I'm sorry, Eddie Hearns, you're a good guy, but all you did was try to give me a worse deal than Roc Nation offered me. Hashtag this is SH over plus a slave deal. Now, I might be a little naive, but I don't recall any slaves getting paid $6.7 million.
I said the same thing. I said the same exact thing. You know, and it's an insult to slaves to call that a slave deal. You know, but my honesty, like, I almost feel like the Twilight Zone. I honestly, and I mean this with my heart, I honestly have no idea how in the world Adrian Broner even got that offer in the first place. Like, I don't know if I'm crazy or what, but I just don't see him as a marquee fighter at all. Like, I literally have no interest in watching him fight. If he never fought again, it wouldn't even register in my brain that he wasn't fighting. I wouldn't even register. So I don't know what he thinks he's doing. I don't know and we talked about this before. I don't know if there's some mental illness going on here, but in my opinion, the way his career and the way his life is going, I feel like he should snatch that offer up and roll with it, because, you know, he could very easily lose his next fight to whoever they put him in with. You know, I don't see Adrian as – he's an underachiever, I guess you could say. I don't see him as super elite fighter like these other people apparently seem to think he is. And I think his record in his last, you know, six fights or whatever it is, I think it bears that out. So he's, you know, he's just like Twilight Zone. He's getting these big offers, and I don't think he's worthy of it. And in my opinion, he should snatch him up, because if he wins, if he's as good as he seems to believe, and if he wins, well, the money will be there right after. He'll be able to get even bigger money after that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, Scully. I mean, you know, the fact that he got the offer at all kind of amazes me. But you know, it's he has good marketing. You know, as you know, the Charlo brothers were complaining about. You know, we're fighting on his undercards, and he's losing. You know, so
right.
So, I mean, it's really kind of, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, but I just don't see how, first of all, he got the deal and then he has the nerve to turn it down. I mean, there's a possibility he might not fight three times, you know, in a year for the rest of his career, just strictly from the amount of purses that he thinks he wants.
Right.
It seems we have another one of those Floyd deals going on here. John Pascal has decided that he's going to make his return, and he's fighting an MMA guy. His last three fights weren't really that successful for John. But what do you think about when you look at, you know, I mean, I can't even see him turning heavyweight. What are your thoughts, man?
Well, I didn't even know that. So he's coming back. John Pascal is making a comeback.
Yes, he's making a comeback. It's supposed to be, I think it's June 25th. I mean,
right? Huh.
But it is. It's not against a legitimate fighter. Like I said, it is against an MMA fighter. And then he says the next fight he wants, of course, is going to be against a boxer, and he's going over that 200-pound mark. So,
Really? See, that kind of stuff, it irritates me. And, you know, and I think when guys reach that point where they're doing these, you know, like odd kind of fights and MMA and these different things that they do, it basically, to me, always indicates that they're at the end of their career or their career is already over, and they're just trying to find ways to cash out and draw attention and different things like that. I think, my gut feeling, my feeling is that John knows that at this point with Arthur and Kovalev and these different guys, he knows he can't overcome that elite level anymore. So I guess he's just trying to find ways to make pretty good money without having to face those guys. But I don't know. I don't agree with that. I don't like when the guys, they pull these different kind of like, you know, shams almost, where they do these spectacles and throw a twist into it to draw attention. And, you know, for me, I just prefer straight up fights. You know, if he wants to come back, he could try and line himself up and fight Arthur, which in Montreal would be a huge fight, I'm sure. But I'm not a fan of the gimmick type of fights. I'm really not.
Yeah, it's slated for June 29th. Lastly, John, I know you have to go. Lomachenko, he's vacating his junior lightweight belt. What do you think as far as, you know, the guys that were in that lightweight division, junior lightweight division, does it open that now, open it up for some good possibilities? What do you think now about Tank? You know, is he going to be kind of the king of that weight class? Lomachenko moving up. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say now it opens the door for Tank to at least claim it, you know, to claim to be the top dog. And you know, I mean, it's a tough spot for Lomachenko, just in the fact that, like I say, I was there at the fight with Linares, and it was very striking at how much bigger he was than Loma. You know, Lomachenko was not a big guy at all. So that's, you know, that could come into play against someone like Mikey Garcia and more physical guys like that. But as far as 130 goes, I mean, I guess, you know, if you can't make the weight, you can't, you know, you don't want to weaken yourself to make it. And I would imagine if this is the scenario, I would imagine they'd try to envision is that Tank would take over at 130 and be impressive, and then he would move up and kind of come after Lomachenko at 135 next year, and you know they could set their sights on a big fight between those two next year if everything goes well.
Well, you know, I think this was a boon for Tank, because I'm pretty sure that Floyd was really trying to throw him out in the deep end with a Lomachenko fight, even at this particular stage of the game. So I think it actually voted better for Tank. John, I know you have to go, so why don't you give us your final thoughts? Oh, man, hey, the big event is coming up this weekend, the Atlantic City Hall of Fame, right? You guys are going to be down there. I've already talked to Smoger. I know he's going to be there. Jabron is going to be down there. So all you guys are going to be down in Atlantic City.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time. It's going to be a great day, great weekend. I know there's a big reception on Friday night, and Holyfield has a fight card Friday. And then Saturday, we're going to be at the event at the Claridge Hotel. And, I know there's going to be autograph signings, and I know I'm going to have my pads with me, my punch mitts, and we're going to have gloves. And if people want to hit the mitts with me, they can do that. And so we're going to have different things going on. And then I know myself and some of the guys, Junior Jones and a couple others, I know Saturday night we're planning on going over to Philadelphia. We're going to get some cheesesteaks at Pat's Steaks and kind of take part in that. And so it's going to be a fun weekend. As I said before a couple weeks ago, I would definitely, because I was there last year, I would definitely recommend anyone from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, if you can drive to Atlantic City this coming weekend, you will have the one of the times of your life, one of the best boxing weekends I've ever been involved with. I'll say that much.
Yeah, well, Jabron will be down there Friday and Saturday, so I'll make sure that he has your numbers and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys can enjoy a great weekend. So thank you so much, Scully. Tell us where they can find you on social media, any final thoughts, and we thank you so much for your time tonight.
Yes, sir. I'm always on Facebook at either Iceman John Scully or John the Iceman Scully, and the Iceman is one word. And Twitter and Instagram, Ice John Scully. And like I always say, plenty of boxing talk and pictures and conversations. And so I welcome anyone to follow me and reach out to me on those different sites, and we can talk boxing. And next week I'll have a nice roundup for you. Little recap of next weekend's events.
All right, Scully, you have a great night, man, and thank you so much, as usual.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you. Good night.
All right. That was the Iceman, as usual, you know, giving us his insights. Always good to talk to the Iceman, when he has so much, such a diverse career. Within the sports consultant trainer, I think you can still catch him on some of the ESPN classics commentating. I'm not sure about some of his old fights or not, but if you want to know someone that's dedicated his life to boxing, still spars with his guys. I mean, you know, that age, I find that very impressive. So that was the Iceman. We're going to talk to a young man that we've had on our Tuesday show before. But he has changed promoters. And we're going to talk to him, Mr. Sean Simpson. He's in the same he has the same promoter, excuse me, as Mr. Kid Chocolate. And we have heard that let me see, what is the date here? Excuse me, I'm just trying to find the date that I've heard. Peter should be back in the ring sometime in July, and excuse me, got something in my throat there. But we're going to talk to Mr. Sean Simpson. For those of you probably don't know a lot about Sean. Even though we've had him on Tuesday night, we'll make sure that we tell you a little bit about the young man. As a matter of fact, I'm pulling him up here on BoxRec right now. Should have done this. Okay. 7-0 right now. He's a bantamweight, 29% knockout rate, two knockouts. He's out of Chicago. So he's 24 years old, he was a part of the Boxing Warriors promotion, but now I believe he's out on his own, seeking a promotion company. We'll ask the young man about his future, what he thinks of the bantamweight division, and I'm sure he's pretty knowledgeable on boxing. So let's get Mr. Simpson in and see what's happening with the young man from Chicago. I hope everyone's long Memorial Day weekend is going well. And not only that, but safe. Just contacted a few people in Baltimore, and we are watching that situation. We hope everyone down there that is safe and, you know, it's another one of those freaks of nature that we just can't. Hello, Mr. Simpson.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, okay. I can hear you now. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm all right.
All right. First, let me give you an introduction. This is Mr. Sean Simpson, young fighter out of Chicago, and we're going to talk a little promotions and about the fight game. Okay. So, how are you doing this evening, Sean?
I'm all right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the boxing game, man. First of all, you know, I know you've been on our Tuesday show, but this is a kind of different audience here. Let's talk a little bit about your career and of course, you know, how you become a professional. So let's start with a few things about how you became a boxer and at what age did you decide to go in the gym?
Can you say that again, that question again?
I said, at what age did you decide to go in the gym, and when did you decide that this was going to be, you know, something that you wanted to do?
I think I was 8 years old when I first started, and then I think about 13 years old is when I decided, like, I was really going to box for a career.
Did you have an extensive amateur career, or was it a very short one?
Yeah, I had over 200 amateur fights, won over 10 national championships, national Golden Glove, national PALs, ranked number one in the nation, 2012 Olympic alternate, things like that.
You know, you said you were 2012 Olympic alternate. We had a lot of controversy. It actually started, I think, in 2012. With some of the scoring in boxing in the 2012 Olympics. Then we saw things get even worse in 2016. And now there's a possibility that there might not be boxing in the Olympics. Sean, I mean, what do you think? What does this do to a young amateur, you know, coming up, you know, like you said, you know, through the amateur ranks, and then all of a sudden not being able to showcase his case, you know, on an international level?
I think that's everybody. I mean, as a kid growing up, that's everybody's dream, to try to make the Olympic team. So as they take the Olympics out, if they take boxing out of the Olympics, that would be heartbreaking to me. Because when you're about 12, 13 years old, 14, that's what you think about. You try to count up the age you'll be when the Olympics come around, and that's your goal, is to make that Olympic team.
I mentioned that you know, to our audience, that you were from Chicago. There's been a lot of great fighters that came out of Chicago. Did any of those guys sorry to be you know, a part of your boxing heritage? I mean, you know, did you watch any of the Chicago fighters, or were you you know, more kind of intent on watching you know, the big boys on the silver screen?
I really don't watch. I'm not one of them fighters that sit there and just watch a lot of boxing. But I train with my head trainer is Montel Griffin, former WBC light heavyweight champion. So that's my trainer right now. And I used to train with Nate Jones, 1996 Olympic bronze medalist. So, you know, things like that. So I keep a lot of legends, Chicago legends around.
You mentioned Montel Griffin. Montel, we've had Montel on the show before. Now, Montel, during his prime, was a great body puncher. Does he bring a lot of that to your workouts and talk about how to attack the body?
Yes. We work on a lot of movement, a lot of leg movement, staying moving, you know, staying out the way so, you know, you can't be hit, not being a sitting target. That's what we work on, boxing, turning, things like that.
Your weight class you already aged 24. Do you anticipate staying in that particular weight class, or are you looking to gain possibly multiple titles once you get up on, you know, that high national level?
Staying at that weight, maybe not. I mean, hopefully, you know, the older I get, the bigger I get. So hopefully after I fight 18 for a nice amount of time, win the world title there, hopefully I can go up in weight. But I also plan on going down to 15 and trying to fight for a world title at 115.
One of the things that your manager mentioned to me was that you and the Warriors had parted company. I kind of took that and ran somewhere else with it. We won't talk about that. But anyway, what was was this like kind of a mutual thing? It was amicable. I mean, there was nothing, you know, there was no animus. But did you kind of think that, you know, maybe you wanted to go in a different direction, or was this their decision? Kind of take us through that, because you're a young man already, but you have an unbeaten record.
Yeah, this is more of a mutual thing, you know. Them saying that, you know, I was a small fighter, and it was hard to move me. Plus, you know, my amateur background and things like that. So people, if we wasn't offering a lot of money, they wasn't really, you know, people wasn't really trying to fight me unless he's offering a lump sum of money. So, and I felt like Warriors thought that was just, you know, it was too much for them to handle right now. And, you know, with my promoter Leon working in the that World Series boxing tournament, you know, like with the light heavyweights and cruiserweights and things like that, he just had a lot on his plate right now. So.
Okay. Have you been contacted by anyone, are you thinking about doing like a lot of these other young fighters that we've had on the show, starting your own promotional program? Have you thought about any of those alternatives?
Not yet. You know, I'm just a fighter right now. I let my team handle everything. You know, Gooch and Antoine Gooch and my dad Tony Simpson and my cut man Joe Pounce from Florida, things like that. They all handle everything, talking to promoters, managers, you know, to find to find me the right deals and things like that. As of right now, I'm just a fighter. I'm just in the gym training, just staying ready to get so when I get called for a fight, I'll be ready.
Yeah, now let's talk about a little bit about your training. You've already, mentioned Montel and you mentioned your dad and that. So tell us a little bit about how you built your team or how your team came to be. How did you did Montel reach out to you? How did that whole relationship start? I mean, like I said, I think Montel is a great guy, and we always look forward to having him on the show. So tell us a little bit about your working relationship with Montel and, the relationship between you and your father as far as the fight game goes.
Well, my dad, I worked with Montel before when I was young, like 11 years old. And then we had stopped working with him and things like that. But like 2 years ago, my dad reached back out to him, and he felt that Montel would be a perfect fit for me in the pros because Montel was a short like heavyweight, and I'm pretty short, so we kind of had a lot of things in common. So my pops felt like we would have worked good together. So we've been working together ever since then. And then with my father, he's been with me since I first started boxing. He's the one that got me into boxing. So he's always been like, he's not the manager, but but everything goes through him first. Like if anybody wants to make any deals or, fights or anything like that, they come to him and talk to him first. And then he comes to me.
Now, it's kind of we had Gary Russell Senior and Gary Russell Junior on the show last week, and that's one of the strong father son relationships that we have found in boxing, We found, in some years that father-son combinations don't really work in the ring. But it seems like within the last 5 years or so, we've seen more father and son relationships come up, and they've seen the work. I mean, of course, we got Angel Garcia and his dad, whatnot. Some of them turn out to be circuses, but, some of them, the relationship between the father and son has been really good. You mentioned the relationship between you and your dad. When you're around, your father all the time, boxing, you're working with him, you have to go home, and then, he's at some point, you have to respect him as a father. At all points, you have to respect him as a father. But does it sometimes, maybe bother you that, he's always there? I mean, that there's no real time to yourself. You know what I mean? And you can't blow up and cuss your father out in the middle of training.
Right.
So, I mean, how do you maintain that balance?
Me and my dad, we got a real good relationship. Of course, every now and then, you have words. Not as far as the parents and nothing, but as far as boxing, you might have words that disagreements. He might think otherwise and things like that. But at the end of the day, it's still my father. So, don't nothing ever get too serious or anything like that. We got a good relationship as far as, friendship and, him being my parent.
Did your father have a background in boxing?
Not nothing to, you know, talk about, but I think he did, you know, try it out when he was a teenager. But he had, I have an older brother that's 33. You know, he was a real good football player, but he also boxed as a kid. So that's how he got him started into it. But he had stopped. You know, he played football, you know, college football and things like that.
Oh, okay. What's your brother's name? We might get him on my sports show.
Oh, yeah, his name is Antoine Dobie. He's a real, you know, all state high school player, things like that.
No, well, he can talk football with us. We always love somebody that can talk football, college level, pro football level, either one. You know, it doesn't matter. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. You say you don't watch a lot of fighters per se. So what do you do in your spare time?
I can't hear you. Say again.
I said you say you don't watch a lot of boxing per se or a lot of fighters. So what do you do in your spare time?
Since I train a lot, I kind of, you know, I sleep a lot.
Okay. You said eat, train, and sleep, huh?
Yeah, I eat, train, and sleep. I work out like three or four times a day. So that's why I be sleep a lot.
Well, why don't you take
that? I watch sports, basketball, football, things like that.
Why don't you take us a little bit through your training regimen?
Well, it depends. You know, I wake up in the morning, go running, and then, you know, I go to the gym early in the morning, and then, you know, three or four times a week, I have strength and conditioning. And then, say if I'm getting ready for a fight, I go to the late night fitness gym and go running and things like that to, you know, to help lose weight.
So, would you say that you're more old school methods, and you don't rely a lot on the different new training techniques? Is it mostly, you know, like running and gym work and pad work and sparring?
Yeah, I do all that. I do all that, you know, pad work, sparring, back, everything.
Is your brother here? I'll smack shit on him.
Yeah, I do all that.
When you think of some of the guys in your particular weight class, I guess it's a little early for you to step up, you know, to a major level, but we have some guys that you know, IBA titleists. We just seen Nico Hernandez get an IBA title in just his fifth fight. Are you thinking about any of those minor belt holders that you could you know, face and propel you up into that prospect level?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't mind fighting. I don't mind fighting anybody. I really don't too much look into, you know, who has what belt or who's in my weight class. Like I said, I just let my team handle everything. And, you know, when they give us a name, I look it over, and then we go from there. But as far as, like, knowing who's in my weight class and things like that, I really don't know.
I know you said that you don't watch a lot of boxing, but have you kept up with any of the things on HBO recently?
Yeah, you know, not HBO, but I just recently seen Gary Russell and Joseph Diaz. You know, I was on the team with Joseph Diaz, sparring with Joseph Diaz, and then I have a real close relationship with Gary Russell, with Gary Russell Sr., Jr., and, you know, all the brothers. I've known them for a long time, so I tuned in that to see them fight, you know, two friends of mine.
Okay. Like I said, we're trying to get the two younger brothers on. If I had known that, I'd have put the three of you on together, but maybe we can still make that happen. I guess, what are you expecting for the rest of this year, or what would you like to happen for the rest of this year? I know your last fight, I believe, was when?
November.
Yeah, in November. So it's May now, almost June. So are you hopefully get back in the ring this year with the new promotion company, or you know, do you think that you know, regardless that Gooch and your dad and the rest of your team will make sure that you have a fight this year, if no more than just to keep busy. But I see you had four fights in 2017, right?
Yeah, right now we're talking to a guy. It looks like I'm scheduled to fight July 28th in Dallas, Texas. So that's a fight right there. And then my dad just told me today that we might schedule another fight already, have another fight scheduled for me before or even after July 28th. So I'm waiting to hear back from him about that.
Okay. Well, hey, we'll most certainly be glad to get you back in the ring. And like I said, after your next victory, maybe we can put you and the two younger Russells on the show together. Come up, you know, young guns. hey, man, I know we've kept you from your Memorial Day weekend plans, and we want to thank you so much for taking out the time to be with us this evening. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on if you have any social media, and any final thoughts that you have for our audience tonight.
You know, you can follow me on social media on my Snapchat, Instagram, and my Twitter at Sean_Simpson2. Sean_Simpson. Then the number 2. Then my Facebook is just like just Sean Simpson.
All right. Well, you can make sure that that you'll get the notice on your Facebook page and your Instagram from the Pugilist Corner, and we hope to follow your career and find out more about the young Sean Simpson. So thank you so much for your time, my man, and we look forward to having you back.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
That was Mr. Sean Simpson, young bantamweight out of Chicago, and we were glad that he could take the time out this Sunday to be with us here on the Weekend Wrap. We're going to kind of cut our program short this evening. Of course, everybody is out enjoying their Labor Day weekend. We hope to have the champ and Jabron back next week. As I said, Jabron will be attending the Hall of Fame ceremonies down there in Atlantic City, as well as attending some of the fights. Don't forget the gentleman that we had on last week, Mr. Derek Webster, will be headlining one of those cards. Make sure you get out, support these young boxers. And, hey, as Scully was saying, and Steve Smolder, if you listened in when we had him on the Pugilist Corner, yes, this will be a great weekend for boxing fans. A couple other things to hit on real quick before we get out of here. I I know a lot of people, you know, kind of get on me for the way I talk about Adrian Broner and whatnot. But you really have to think, what is on this guy's mind? The slave wage, that of course was, you know, a little over the top for me. I don't understand when you are on your career is actually on the brink of disaster, how you can think that people are going to have any credibility in what you're saying when you get so not only over the top, but your performances don't match your bravado. I think that a few fighters have legitimate beefs, concerns, whatever you want to call it, about how much longer Adrian is going to be a headline fighter. And then you turn down this type of money. As I said, one knockout, and I think his career could be seriously derailed. Mr. Broner, you know, kind of think before you talk. The about billions, you have to get millions before you can get billions. You know, millions grow into billions. So, I'm not exactly sure what he thinks his career is going to end up. I'm not, I can't believe once again that he turned this deal down. But anyway, we do know that the Crawford bout is still going to be on. Everybody's looking forward to that. Still plenty of tickets available if anybody is interested. Make sure you go to Magna Media. They can show you your tickets. You can get tickets before the deadline. So have a great night, everyone. We look forward to talking to you again next week. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. And hey, as always, don't forget to catch us Tuesday night on the Pugilist Corner. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week.